Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh-
What's up, everybody?
Football.
Welcome to Punch Drunk Critics Live.
I hate fantasy football. I hate it.
I'm actually liking it this week.
Yes. I'm sure you do. I hate it. I want it to just go away. That's all. I want it to stop now. It needs to just stop. There should be a ban on fantasy football for at least the remainder of this season. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, like the American public needed something else to get worked up over after football Sundays. If people are invested enough in the teams, now we're invested in 12 teams because of one player, and it just makes it that much worse.
Everybody on my team is getting hurt, and it's killing me. I'm just
or
they're just not playing well, like a certain Dez Bryant for the Cowboys or the Cowboys defense. Those guys are scrubs, man. I swear, they're killing me.
Yeah. I'll move it off Facebook football and just say the Washington in the metro area have a hard fought battle against the St. Louis Rams right now, and my Tampa Bay Buccaneers dropped one in true Redskins fashion. As a matter, I should say a good game still, but I just can't believe that. So my
football is not perfect. How can you be Dez Bryant and have as much talent as you have and not be able to do anything? I don't know why I held on to this guy for another season. He's killing me.
Well, he tapped himself last week, didn't he?
I don't know, man. I saw him drop two passes today, and it was just like whatever. whatever.
Well,
my starting running back gets hurt. It's the second one I've lost in 2 weeks. It's just bad. This is going to be one of those seasons, man. I've been doing this league for almost a decade. I haven't had this type of season yet, so I guess I was due. But it sucks anyway. It hurts.
Yeah. Last season was kind of my season like that in our league. 4 years now. I was thinking about the other day. We've actually been doing the site and the show for 4 years, I think, unless I'm mistaken. It's crazy if you think about it. So
no,
it's
crazy.
My long-running fantasy football league as well. So
yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Sorry for anybody that tuned in right at 7:30. I don't really know what happened, to be honest with you. I was signed into the show. I was ready to host, but it told me I wasn't there. So I had to re-come back in. But we're good now. It was only a 30-second delay. So
we're good.
Yeah, we actually had a pretty fun show for you guys today. I think if anybody's listening live, hopefully you are, feel free to call in later on in the show. We're going to be talking about the future of video game movies. That number is 877-217-3925, 877-217-3925. And don't forget, we also have a live chat room that Travis, you always sign into that, don't you? I always forget.
I usually sign in. I'm in there right now.
And so make sure to check in there and let us know what you think about the future of video game movies. A lot of fun stuff to talk about today. A pretty amazing interview, I would say, with if anybody read the description for the show, it really does make me feel a little bit less ambitious, knowing that Emily Hagens, who we're going to have on the show in a little bit, directed her first feature film at 12. I'm not talking, you know, a little Justin Bieber fan film talk on YouTube. I'm talking like feature film. 12 years old. That's amazing to me. Has a new movie out called My Sucky Teen Romance that Travis talked to her about. We're going to be playing that for you in a little bit.
Yep. But we're also going to be talking about the future of video games, like you said, later on. And but right now, I think we're going to talk about another video game movie that kind of sparked our conversation, and that's Resident Evil Retribution.
Yes.
And this is the fifth in the Resident Evil franchise. God, that's hard to believe. This is the fifth one, and this has actually been going on for 10 years now.
Yep.
They have been consistent with putting out one of these movies every 2 years, and for good reason. I mean, they all make money. And
yeah,
this is something
included in a slow time for movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something that we'll talk about later on when we get to the box office, but the Resident Evil movies, they do okay domestically. They usually top out at about $60 million domestic or so. But on the international market, man, Paul W.S. Anderson, you know, for all the times we call him a hack here in America for his hacky movies, the international market loves him. I mean,
yeah,
all the Resident Evil movies make about 200 mil on a foreign market. Even Three Musketeers, which came out, I think, last year, you know, it does gangbusters on the foreign market. So he makes movies that work internationally, and, you know, they have a kind of a moderate appeal here in the States, but hey, they're enough to make him and his wife, Mila Jovovich, rich and, you know, keep cranking these movies out. So,
I mean,
hey,
he's
more power
to him. Pretty good track record, I think. I mean, it seems funny to me the way movies perform here and overseas. It almost seems like movies that we actually like, we'd like to say if they're not highbrow enough, we don't like them. And it doesn't seem to have that problem. I mean, I don't really talk to a lot of people overseas, so I don't know how the critics talk about them there. But at least in the box office, people seem a lot less apprehensive to go pay money to see a movie like this, even though they know when they rent it on video, they're going to like it. I mean, let's look at some of the movies he's done that were good that didn't get their due. You know, the Resident Evil series, DOA, that's kind of a guilty pleasure. Well, definitely a guilty pleasure. Death Race, which I thought was a phenomenal action movie.
He directed DOA?
Yes.
Dead or Alive?
No, I'm sorry. He produced that one.
I was about to say. What?
He did Death Race, Alien vs. Predator, which I know a lot of people didn't like, but I thought it was pretty good. The first Mortal Kombat, Event Horizon, which is one of those huge underrated horror movies. I didn't really like it.
I do like Event Horizon. I'm not gonna lie, I do like it.
Yeah, it's a good enough movie. I think, you know, it's on everybody's list for top horror movies you haven't seen, but it didn't really strike that kind of chord with me. It was still a good movie. And now we have Resident Evil Retribution. I mean, I'm not even remember the names of them anymore.
They're all interchangeable. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, one time is somebody just throw a random subtitle in there, like Resident Evil facetiousness, and see if anybody questions it.
None of these mean anything. I mean, they don't. None of these subtitles mean anything when it comes to these Resident Evil movies. Mm-hmm. And it, basically, at this point, I think the plot is pretty much incomprehensible. I mean, I said in my review that it's like the rare franchise that has a razor thin plot and yet is still incomprehensible. I can't figure out. If you ask me to describe what's been happening these last five movies, I probably couldn't do it. But
they are
also
really
couldn't
forgettable, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I also probably couldn't tell you that they're overly complicated either. I mean, it's really weird. I mean, because this one is pretty straightforward. I mean, basically what you have in this situation is that Alice, who is the main heroine, she used to be superpowered, now she's not, she's back to being normal. Well, basically she wakes up in the middle of the Umbrella Corporation, and this is after she has this rather vivid, I guess you would call it an illusion, but I guess it's really a kind of a souped-up hologram, where she's, you know, kind of living the idyllic lifestyle, and then, of course, reality intrudes and zombies and all that crap. But she wakes up in the middle of the Umbrella Corporation, and basically she just has to get out. The building that she's in is underground. It's basically one giant hologram simulation. They can make anything they want, and she just has to escape and get out into civilization in order to affect her attempt to destroy Umbrella one more time. That's really all it is. And along the way, she runs into a bunch of old faces who I guess are clones in a sense that the Umbrella Corporation has created. Mm-hmm. Michelle Rodriguez comes back. A couple of other faces. And she runs into some new friends as well. Ada Wong, who's a popular Resident Evil video game character. And some other ones show up as well. But that's all it is her trying to get out of this building and fighting a bunch of monsters and dudes in suits along the way and trying to escape Jill Valentine, who was her friend but is now brainwashed by Umbrella.
Yeah.
So that is it.
Way hotter as a brunette, I think, Sienna Gilroy.
I agree. I would totally agree with you on that. The one for me is Lee Fang Fang or whatever her name
Bing
is.
Bing Bing Lee? I love that name.
Lee Bing Bing, as Ada Wong. I think she's so sexy. But the Ada Wong character is sexy.
Yeah.
But that's it. It is very straightforward. It's a get-in-and-get-out situation here with a lot of fighting in between. Mm-hmm. But personally, I think this is probably the worst of the Resident Evils in some years. And I've been kind of a proponent of this franchise for a while. I don't think they're great by any means, but they serve their purpose, which is just to show Mila Jovovich being really sexy and fighting a lot and do a lot of slow motion. And I thought Afterlife probably reached the best technical heights out of all of them. I thought it looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
With the 3D edition and stuff like that. It has some of the best 3D we saw all of 2010. This one looks really shoddy to me.
Yeah. It seemed like Afterlife, they really promoted the 3D, whereas they didn't do it as much with this. I don't know if it's because it's not as new now. But I've actually got a unique perspective, not of my own, from my wife on this movie, and also conspiracy theories. So I don't know which order I'm going to go in here, but Resident Evil for me has always been a fun movie to watch. Nothing that I would buy on Blu-ray, nothing that I would go out of my way to watch again, but fun to watch, no doubt. My wife, on the other hand, loves these movies. This one I liked better than the last couple ones I've seen. This one she hated the most out of all of them. And I think it's got something to do with the male, female, or video game player, non-video game player perspective. This movie really blurs the line between video game adaptation and straight video game video, basically. Because, I mean, even right down to the pause map, you have everything that you would see in a video game. But they managed to do it without coming off as cheesy as, like, the first-person view of Doom or something like that. But there is zero plot, at least zero plot that makes any sense. It's literally get from point A to point B. And I think that was fun. It really, the movie started out is one of those movies that as the first 20 minutes go through, you're like, oh, I'm ready to walk out. And then slowly gets back, and it turns right back around to being so bad it's good.
I was bored to death. I was really bored.
I wasn't bored because there's no stopping the action, but being like the kind of logically picky person that I am, there were certain things that I couldn't get over, like the fact that the bad guys were obviously Nazi. If you look at the preview for Iron Sky or any kind of Nazi type movie, that's right. An action flashy movie, you'll see the same black trench coat, hat, gas mask soldiers. But they're supposed to be Russian, which I thought was funny because the Russians were the ones fighting the Nazis more than we were in World War II. But also that they kind of just threw everything out the window with logic. I mean, it's zombies, but you know what I mean. Logic for the series, and really just went for what looks coolest. For instance,
when the guys in suits aren't zombies, are they?
Yeah. It's literally right out of Dead Snow. If you look when the rescue team, which is Leon Kennedy,
you're probably right.
from the series, everybody knows, and yeah. A couple of the other familiars.
A lot of good he did in this movie.
Yeah, he did as good as he did in the game. He stood there and looked cool.
Fucking A, man. Why introduce a popular character like that people have been wanting? I've been people begging to see Leon Kennedy be in these movies.
Uh-huh.
What a fucking waste of time putting him in there.
He's a waste in the game, too. I actually read an article about how he's the worst Special Forces soldier ever in the history of the world. I think at this point they're just trying to throw in as much to the fans as they can. But, I mean, that scene I was talking about where they corner him in the Russian sub-complex is right out of Dead Snow without the snow. I mean, it's zombie Nazis with machine guns. I mean, zombies are now shooting machine guns and driving tanks and wearing uniforms and everything else. So, I mean, all that stuff for being the zombie movie or infected movie, whatever you want to call it, same thing, is out the window. Now, real quick, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my conspiracy theory, but I really think this movie could possibly be a setup for one of those Twin Peaks-esque mind screws, because if you notice, every single movie starts with Alice waking up in an umbrella facility, and then you see all the things, like a game over. Like when you die, you start over again, and every single time it's game over, game over, game over, and then she starts her new character. And this one is so blatantly, I mean, with bringing back all the old characters and everything like that, it's really like, you know, at the end it could be like she could just wake up in the original mansion and be like, you have passed your security exam or something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I figure if they were going to do that, they would have done it in this movie because they kind of set that up pretty hard at the very beginning of the movie, and then they just. And then they don't go with it. I don't think they're going to do it again because I think that's just a little too tacky.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this a little bit last week where I was saying I think they could be trying to set up something where maybe Alice goes away and they kind of pass the torch to another character. But I don't think enough of them survived to really have that happen. So I kind of think that maybe the sixth movie will actually be the last one like they said it would be. So I hope that's the case, because I think this franchise has finally worn down now. It's time to go. It had a really good run, better than anybody could have expected. But yeah. It's time for it to go away. And now we're already hearing talk of Paul W.S. Anderson doing another Capcom property in Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think he might be already eyeing something else now as a replacement for this. And he'll probably put his wife in Monster Hunter, too, the way he puts her in everything.
Why not?
I mean, there's a market. I mean, there's an obvious fan base for people mm-hmm. who want to see her kick ass and look hot doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him one bit for capitalizing on it.
Not at all.
Yeah, so I think the next movie will be the last one. This one will do well, and then they'll move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see that. It's funny the parallels this runs to an actual video game lifespan. Just even in stuff like this, like Resident Evil, the game series is now on what, 6 or 8, somewhere around that.
It's number 6 just comes out. If it's not already out, it comes out in like a couple weeks.
And Resident Evil first came out just like a movie that kind of surprises people. Came out to not much fanfare and then got really, really big. And then 2 was the best one. And that's kind of the same way this goes down. Is that now at this point you're kind of like, are there any more stories to tell? I think there's more movability with a video game because people aren't as tied to the characters because there's not an actor actress associated to them. But there was too much. I had a lot of fun with this movie, but there's too much stuff that was just like glanced over for me to really give it a great score or even a good score. Just stuff that really bothered me, like you know, her daughter in the movie is hearing impaired. And if you watch, one of the things that really, really bugged me, because Ariana Engineer, I believe the girl that played her, is really hearing impaired. So it wouldn't be that hard to teach Mila Jovovich before the scene what signs to do. But if you watch the movie, she's doing the same two signs for every word. She's doing the peace sign and pointing at her. For every single thing, over and over, and stuff like that. I know it's little, but it just shows me that you care nothing about the details.
That's assuming that the Alice character knows sign language.
Well, why would she be doing it otherwise?
Maybe just that's all she knows. I've been trained in sign language a little bit, but if you mm-hmm. asked me to communicate with somebody, I'd be terrible, and I'd probably do like the same two signs too. I just don't think it's something that's worth getting upset over. I'd be more upset.
I'm using it as an example of about 20 different things that it just signifies to me that they didn't care at all about the details. But it was still fun. Don't get me wrong.
I'd be more upset over the fact that this movie, it's still like when I talk about how boring it was, and you mentioned how much action there is. Yeah, there's plenty of action, but it's all the same action mm-hmm. over and over. It's still doing the same pseudo Matrix crap it's been doing since 2002, and nothing has really changed about that. I mean, and you have this situation where she's in this building that can basically replicate anything it wants to, and we get this really dull, flat version of Tokyo. And I was like, really? That's all we're gonna get? And then the rest of it is grungy tunnels and sanitized white hallways and shit. I mean, it's just there's no imagination to it at all. When they had this great idea, you know what I mean? I don't know. That stuff is what bothers me the most. And when I was at Comic-Con and they showed that Arctic fight scene between Michelle Rodriguez's character and Alice and some other characters, and it was about 5 or 6 minutes long, and I was like, this is really, really boring. and then I saw it in the movie, and I was bored all over again, which was really bad because it was a midnight showing. So it was really tough. I was like, come on.
I can definitely see what you mean by it would be boring, because it is very repetitive. I always proclaim myself to be an action junkie as well as a horror junkie, and I mean that not in quality, but in I'll take whatever I can get. Like, I don't mind seeing probably one of the reasons I like Van Damme so much, because I don't mind seeing a split kick over and over and over and over and over again. And that's probably why I like movies like this as well. But there is a lot of stuff to be bothered about in that as well. Like the whole fact of the setting being in a giant holographic test chamber, basically for Umbrella, paints them into a corner of logical mess, because you know, why would this genius Red Queen that wants to eliminate everybody just send out a couple soldiers, just release a damn virus or set off a nuke in there? You know,
there's a lot of things she could have done.
Yeah,
that would make a lot more sense. Like, why only release 2 of those executioners when you could release like 10? You know,
meat tenderizer, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, why not do that? There's a lot of things that could have happened that didn't happen if we think about them too much. But this was just a really boring movie to me, for lots of repetitive action. Mila Jovovich is still as good as ever. I think she's. I still think she's solid in these movies. Mm-hmm. There's not that much required of her except to be really athletic and hot and badass, and she's still that.
Yeah.
But everything else about this movie, I think this is the worst one that they've had in a long time, and I'm ready to see these things go away now. So
if they want to keep making them, I'm fine with it because I can choose to go or not go. And you know, if I have a boring Saturday, no problem to go. I won't be going out of my way to see them. But they're just dumb enough to be mindless enjoyment for an hour and a half, nothing more, maybe a little bit less. So I can't give it better than a 3 out of 5. And I think that's a generous score for it.
Yeah, I gave it a 1.5 out of 5. I really dislike this movie. So, unfortunately, it was the only major movie that came out this week.
Yeah.
So that made this week a tough one. I did go see a movie called Hello, I Must Be Going, which is a movie that I saw at Sundance, and I didn't get a chance to review, and I loved it then, and I saw it again at the beautiful new Angelica Theater in Fairfax.
Yeah. I was supposed to go to the opening of that thing, or the tour that they did before, and I couldn't make it. Nice theater I've heard, huh?
It is a very nice theater. I took the tour. I'll be there again this Thursday for another thing they're having. But it's very nice, and the movie is great. It stars Melanie Lynskey, who's one of my favorite actresses, finally getting her shot at a leading role for the first time in like 20 years. So I suggest anybody who hasn't seen Hello, I Must Be Going, check out the Angelica Theater. It opens there next Friday, and check that one out. It is a great film. You will not regret it. But that theater is pretty sweet, man. But I'm sure rich people are going to love seeing their movies there because no one else will be able to afford it. It's extremely expensive. I can already tell it's going to be expensive. They didn't even put the prices up on the menu yet. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be expensive. I mean, they got their own chef, and the menu's really crazy. All these different types of hot dogs and gourmet popcorn, all this stuff. I was like, yeah, it's
gourmet popcorn. I can get down with different types of hot dogs. The only type of different type of hot dog I ever remember liking is, you remember in the early 90s there was a hot dog that was out that was like stuffed with mustard or something like that.
Ooh, that remember. Sounds disgusting.
It might not have been mustard. It was stuffed with something, and it was awesome and amazing.
Hot dog stuffed with something sounds nasty.
Yeah, because it's already stuffed with everything that's left over. There was one movie I wanted to ask you about. I saw you put a review up for is the new John Krasinski movie.
Oh, Nobody Walks.
There you go. I saw the trailer for this, and it looked quasi interesting, but a little bit too full of itself. And it looks like I was right on the ladder.
Yeah, it is. Nobody Walks stars John Krasinski from The Office, and Olivia Thirlby from Juno, and you know, other stuff like that. Olivia Thirlby is a fantastic actress. I love her, and I expected a lot from this movie. It's also co-written by Lena Dunham, who's the one who created that show Girls on HBO. Mm-hmm. So she's really hot right now. But the movie has Thirlby starring as a New Yorker, an artist who goes to L.A. To work with a renowned sound engineer in Hollywood, played by Krasinski. And while she's there, they kind of enter into an affair, which is strange because he's married to Rosemarie DeWitt, and why you would ever cheat on her is beyond me. But anyway, they have an affair, and she's staying in their house, and it causes all sorts of problems. She's sort of like this woman she's like 23 years old, and she's just kind of discovering the power she has over guys, like discovering her own sexuality. But she's not like a bitch or anything. She's not trying to manipulate guys or anything. She's just kind of, I guess experimental is one word I would use, or maybe just a little bit careless with the feelings of others. But anyway, the movie's really slow and it lags, and there's no passion between Krasinski and Olivia Thirlby, which is really sad because some of the scenes they have together where they're just kind of doing their work, like showing the process of sound engineering and stuff like that, is really cool, and they seem to be really into it. But when it comes to the passionate stuff, there is just not there. Ultimately, I gave it a 2 out of 5. I thought it was disappointing. There was a lot more potential to it, but I described it as an episode of Girls without all the humor.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what made me want to ask you about it in the first place. It's kind of unfortunate to me that John Krasinski is such a likable guy. And in Something Borrowed. I thought he really showed a lot of potential, but he just can't. He's one of those guys that can't seem to get a break outside of his original break. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm curious to see how this movie he does with Matt Damon called Promised Land. I'm curious to see how that plays out because it sounds pretty good, and I know that he wrote the script with Damon and Gus Van Sant's directing it, and it's sort of a old school style. Frank Capra-esque story. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. I think it comes out at the end of this year in limited release, and it'll probably come out here in early of 2013.
Cool. Now, my second teen romance, the Emily Higgins movie we're talking about, I didn't get a chance to see it, so you'll have to run it down. But let's talk about that one, and then we'll listen to the interview that you did.
Yeah.
I did.
Well, My Sucky Teen Romance, it's about this I'm trying to think of how to describe it now. It's been a couple weeks since I saw it. But basically it's about this girl who's sort of a dork, and she goes to this comic convention where she falls in love with another boy who's a fellow nerd, but he also turns out to be a vampire. He turns out to be a vampire, and while they're trying to have their first kiss, he's bumped in the hallway and accidentally bites her, turning her into a vampire as well. So there are other vampires running around in this convention who are kind of using all the costumes to hide in plain sight, which I thought was really kind of clever. But basically the film is about her trying to transform back into being human, and at the same time also trying to find another vampire who was killing people at the convention. So it's just kind of a quirky little comedy with some really very authentic teenage dialogue, as you might expect, considering it's from a teenage writer and director. But I thought it was really refreshing to have actual teenagers playing these roles and an actual teenager, you know, making this movie. Because usually what you get are a bunch of 40-year-old men writing this stuff, and they don't quite – it never quite sounds right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it was really nice to see how this plays out with actual teenagers involved.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, you just can't – that's one of the main reasons I wanted to see this movie, actually, was because she is writing about people her age. It's just a realness that you don't get anywhere else. It's kind of like when a nerdy screenwriter who never really had a lot of friends tries to write about the cool kid in high school. It's going to be a caricature, or at least it's going to be off a little bit. To have somebody writing about it that actually knows – about the material, it usually makes for a really good thing, and it sounds like they did so. She did so on this movie as well.
Yeah, she did, and you know, she takes a lot of pot shots at Twilight fans, which I thought was really funny. But it never goes into being mean spirited. It's just kind of haha, you know, kind of making fun of pop culture in a sense.
Right.
But there are a couple cool cameos in there as well. Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool News is in there. He also rips into the Twilight fans in his one scene, which I thought was really funny. And it kind of has a Buffy the Vampire Slayer tone to it, too. It's funny, a little bit bloody, occasionally dark, but mostly it's light in tone. So I enjoyed it, and I think Emily Higgins has quite a future as a director.
Is that going to be our mark for success when we start get cast in movies?
Well, our friend Kevin is making a movie right now, so maybe we should go ask him if we can be in his.
Yeah, he is. He's. I heard about that actually. I just want to make sure we don't. I was watching Galaxy Quest this morning.
I just made Susan watch that like a week ago.
Awesome movie.
She watched it in full, and I laughed at her afterwards. I was like, "You just watched Galaxy Quest."
She liked it, didn't she?
She actually did enjoy it.
I mean, you don't have to be a Star Trek fan to like it. That's what I like so much about it. But I've gotten this habit, or especially since I got my iPhone, that whenever I'm watching a movie, I'm concurrently reading the trivia on IMDb, which, you know, gives me plenty of great factoids that I'll never be able to use. But I thought it was funny that the bad guy, Saris, whatever his name is, in the Galaxy Quest, is actually modeled after, or named after more rather, an actual film critic that apparently gave them some bad reviews previously. So I think we'll wait for that level of success. But if you're ready for that, let's go to the interview. All right.
Yeah, let's do that now.
So check this out, and we'll be back after this interview. Check it out.
First of all, I really enjoyed My Sucky Teen Romance. It was a lot of fun. No, it was a lot. I was just saying it was a lot of fun. I really like what you did with it.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you had fun with it. That's the most important part.
Absolutely, and I can tell you guys are having fun with it too, and that's kind of the point, I guess. You've made your first film at the age of 12, right? And that was Pathogen. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Or that was the first feature film. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how that went and what got you started wanting to make movies at such a young age.
Well, I had started making short films a couple of years before that. I watched a lot of movies. I was just kind of a big movie geek, and my dad had a background in advertising, and so mm-hmm. he walked me through the process of making a short film. So I knew when I was like 9 years old that it wasn't just, you know, run out with a camera and shoot whatever you want. You had to, you know, script and storyboard and shot list, and that really helped me when I decided I wanted to make a feature. I worked on a local independent feature, and I got to see what they were doing, and I thought, oh, wow, that's awesome. It's like making a short film, but every day. And not quite the case, but so I kind of just, I guess, went and saw what happened. It never really occurred to me that I wouldn't finish it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It took about 2 years. 2 to 3 years.
2 years? The whole thing was chronicled in a documentary, right? Zombie Girl. Mm-hmm. And what was it like having the whole thing, you know, kind of covered from somebody on the outside? Was that a little weird?
Yeah. A little bit. They had bigger cameras, and they were older than me, and I think also being in middle school, you were thinking, you know, oh, everyone's watching me all the time. I can't, you know, pick my nose and whatever, but in that case, they were actually, you know, around all the time. And also, like, being a filmmaker, I knew, like, well, they have to get this shot for the tension in the movie, so I, you know, was trying to think about what was working for them and what I was doing. And then I think the favorite thing I like to say about that experience is I was having trouble one time with a tripod, and I kept thinking, well, this is good for their movie at least. And after like 5 minutes, I asked them to help me, and they set down their camera and helped me with that. But of course, it's, you know, a 90-minute movie documenting a couple of years of my life. And I don't know, all the drama in it is kind of hyped up a little bit for a movie standpoint, but I don't know. It wasn't a very dramatic process.
Did your father's advertising background, has it come into, has it been a factor in kind of promoting your first few films?
Well, he was, he worked for a very small advertising firm in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. They did stuff for like cable news and stuff, or like local news. Mm-hmm. So he was just interested in film in general and tried to help me when he could, but a big thing for my parents, they really wanted me to just try things, and they're both artistic. My dad's also a musician. My mom's a graphic designer. Oh, and so cool. they really wanted to, like, see what I liked, and they say, you like sports? You like, you know, cooking? I don't know. They really were always trying to throw things at me and see what stuck. And the movies, it was always there, and then when he showed me a little bit about the process but wouldn't do it for me, I realized, well, I like doing it anyway. It's not really work. It's fun. And so I just went out and did that.
But most of your movies have been horror, so is that, like, your favorite genre, the horror movie?
Well, I think, to be honest, I probably wasn't thinking so hard about this at the time, but now, in hindsight, horror is a really good place to start, I think, because you can do a lot with a little bit.
Right.
You don't have to show everything to scare people, and you can tell when the audience is engaged based on the way they're reacting to a movie, because if you film, or if you make a drama, people are watching it. You don't know if they're liking it or not until afterwards.
Right.
It's very heavy. But with horror, you do something really fun, and you don't need a lot of resources to do it, and the audience is very accepting. The horror community will like anything, as long as, you know, it's fun, and they can have a good time with it. It doesn't matter if it costs you, you know, $100 to make it or $1 million to make it.
Right.
As long as they feel like you made something for them that they can either be really scared of or have a good time and be like, oh, you know, and really engage with it, then I think it's just a really good place for independent filmmakers to start, you know, developing techniques. And it's something I'm interested in doing more stuff within the genre, but I'd also like to branch out to comedy.
Well, you kind of blend both of them with My Slugged Teen Romance. Tell me where the idea for that film came from.
It was kind of a combination. I really wanted to make a teen vampire story while teen vampires were so prominent in pop culture. And it was such a big part of growing up for me, I guess. Like in middle school and high school, everyone was reading them and it was just everywhere. And I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to use, you know, my teen perspective as a filmmaker. And but I wanted to create characters in a story that weren't overshadowed by that. So I really wanted to make a movie that took place in a science fiction convention because I love them. And I like the homemade kind of thing, not the big Comic Con, big advertisement type convention, which is cool.
The local conventions.
Yeah. Again, like I wanted the characters to be the, you know, the forefront of, you know, people's attention and not the setting or the vampires, because those are just catalysts for like how things are happening. But really, just wanted them to carry their own story. So it kind of came from a combination of wanting to do the science fiction convention movie, as well as teen vampires.
Now, while all your friends were there reading Twilight or whatever it was, were you the person who was just kind of making fun of them in the background? Because the movie is kind of snarky in regards to, you know, Twilight and things like that. It kind of pokes fun at it a little bit.
I guess I read Twilight when I was 14, and I was a teenage girl, and I thought, oh boy, true love, how great. And then the more distance I got from it as I got older, I just thought, wow, I don't know about this. And I think that really, I don't know, it's like, I don't want to say anything negative about something that people put their creative energy into, but I guess I also think it's a little bit not so good. So
it's kind of, now you just said something negative about it.
Honestly,
I think you walk a pretty nice balance of having fun with you know, kind of the silliness of Twilight, and without being too harsh. I don't think you go overboard, so you don't have to worry. I think you're fine.
Oh, good. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, I think like there's a really easy, you know, jab to make there, and I think if we poke too hard at that, then it would just make for a shallow film. There's no reason to do that. I saw Vampire Suck. I don't remember anything about it.
I think Vampire Suck was the movie that, you know, it's one of those movies that actually did go overboard, I think. But that was kind of the point of it though. So I mean, you know.
Yeah. Good for them.
And yeah, good for them. You know, some people seem to enjoy it. Talk about the casting for me, because you got a great cast of mostly unknowns in this movie. Were they all like friends of yours, or did you do some general casting in the area?
Yeah, they. I knew a lot of them beforehand. Some of them went to my high school but were in the theater program. Some of them were from other film programs. But they all had varying interests in film, and which made for a very good, committed cast. Like, nobody was just a kid I pulled off the street and said, hey, you, come be in my movie.
Right.
So it was they all had different styles. The theater kids were less into improv. The film kids were more into it. And so I was just bridging those two styles. But not a lot of them were very experienced in feature films. And so that was an interesting process, and I really wanted to touch base with everybody. And we got together a lot as a group and went over things. And I just wanted to make sure everyone was comfortable. I really wanted a cast that felt genuine and awkward and like the kids everyone went to high school with, and not 30-year-olds playing high school kids. Like in some TV shows and stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's one of the best parts about the movie, is that it feels totally authentic, mainly because of the cast, and I think you have a real ear for teenage dialogue, which I guess you should, like you said, in a lot of movies you have, you know, 40-year-old men writing teenagers and stuff like that, and it doesn't really jibe But what about Elaine Hurt? Because I thought she was amazing in this movie, actually. I really, really loved her character. She a friend of yours as well?
Yeah, she's a funny story because we went to a film camp together, and she played a part. She played one of the main parts in our short film because we couldn't find anyone else to play it. Mm-hmm. And she really wanted to be behind the scenes, but she was so natural. And she was not fazed by the camera. She was good at improvising and getting lots of coverage and doing it very quickly. And she was very professional and natural, and she had no idea. So I asked her if she would play a small part in the feature. And she said she wanted to work on the crew. And then I said, actually, I think you play this other part better. And she looked at it, she's like, I'm on every page. She's so natural, and in real life, she's very, like, funny and charismatic, and she, like, way overplays the, awkwardness of the character, and I think some people think it's not acting, but it really is, because she's so funny in real life, and outgoing and all that. But she's really great, and I really hope she decides to continue acting. She's definitely going to keep making movies. She's very good at that. I think she's just kind of so-so on the acting.
Right.
Opinion on acting is so-so. Sorry, I kind of phrased that weird. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. Cool. Talk to me about how the association with Ain't It Cool News began, because Harry Knowles makes for a very funny cameo in the film. So how did that come about?
Yeah. Well, I live in Austin, Texas, and Ain't It Cool is based here, and Harry lives here. Mm. And used to do this thing called the Kids Club, where he'd show an old movie, not necessarily a kids movie, but something that kids would benefit maybe from watching, because it's not kind of a traditional kids movie, but appropriate for kids. And so I went to that, just being a movie geek from birth. I went to that every month, and so I got to know him when I was younger, like about 9-10 years old. And so he was always very supportive of my projects. When I made Pathogen, he had a small part in that. And, just any time I was working on something, he would support it on Ain't It Cool. I was very thankful for that. So I asked him to play this vampire expert, and he didn't say a single word that I wrote. He made up his little speech entirely. But it really worked, I think. He did a good job.
No, he absolutely did. I thought that was a lot of fun. So you say that you're a movie geek. What horror movies have influenced your career so far?
I would definitely say that there are some specific ones within the genres that I've worked with that influenced those movies. Like Night of the Living Dead was an influence on Pathogen, but that's like a stock answer, right? Everyone would say that.
Right.
Made a zombie movie, but I guess more specifically to Pathogen. There was an Australian zombie movie called Undead. It's really, really silly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the movie that completely shifted my perception of horror, because I was just scared of anything, even like Halloween and Chuck E. Cheese and anything that seemed wrong. I was scared of it. And then I saw this zombie movie. It's so silly. And everyone was having so much fun with it, and just totally turned my impression around. And I wanted to make a zombie movie that was just as goofy. So that one was a huge horror influence for some reason. And I always tell people to watch it because it's floating out there. I think Lionsgate is out in America. And then also, like, The Lost Boys was big on Sucky Teen Romance.
Yep.
I'm actually looking at my DVDs right now. Evil Dead, kind of a stock answer as well because it's classic.
Oh, I mean... yeah, but if you're going to pull from something, I mean, those are the good movies to choose from. So it's not a bad thing to mention a classic as an influence. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, totally. and Evil Dead is such a low budget film as well, and is so effective. And they do so much with it. And I think it's there's a lot to learn from big films, because I'd say Lord of the Rings inspired me to make movies in general. And which is how I, spawned talking to my dad about it and everything. But I knew, like, that was not the movie I was going to go out and make with my camcorder.
Right.
So I think watching low-budget movies, especially low-budget horror movies, is such a huge benefit to any filmmaker, because it really shows how you can be creative with what you have.
Right. And that will definitely come in handy down the line when you start getting bigger budgets.
You can just build on that. Totally.
Exactly. Do more with less. Speaking of budgets, you used Indiegogo for financing part of this movie, right? Did you do that for all of them, or was it just this one?
Just Sucky Teen. It wasn't really around before that.
Yeah, that's true.
But, it worked really well. We raised about, I think, a little under $15,000 between two campaigns through Indiegogo.
Nice.
And then we had other various, financing things to kind of support that. But it was a really great resource. And I think for this particular movie, we're, wanting to appeal to vampire fans and to fans of geekdom. And it was a really good way to reach out to those audiences and say, we want to be respectful of you. We want you to be excited about this project. And it really helped us kind of find that audience.
Right. Are you planning on using it again for anything you got upcoming?
I'm going to use Kickstarter, though, because it's a little bit more money. Indiegogo, right. I think, is really great. And the reason why we used it is because they take more of a percentage than Kickstarter does. But it's you get the money no matter what. And that was a really big part of Becky Teak Romance. And because we're asking for more money on this next movie, it seems like a better idea to use Kickstarter so, we don't make half of our goal and there's like one person who's, sent in that half goal and they're like, what do we do? We just want to make sure we get to that amount of money to make the film. And we'll see. I don't know. Knock on, with all whatever is around.
So at this age, you've already got more experience than, a lot of directors who are, in some cases, twice your age. So what would you say you've learned during that time? Through three feature films, what would you say you've learned about filmmaking so far?
I think the most important thing that's kind of been a big part of all three films was telling a good story without letting budget and other limiting factors that were just inherent to the project because I was a kid, and people, I didn't have a lot of resources to draw from. So making sure to tell those stories without having all those other things be distracting factors from, people being engaged in the movie at the end of the day. So, sometimes ideas were too high concept and I'd have to talk to the producer or whoever and, we had to figure out a compromise. And but just at the end of the day, telling a good story and using what you have to do it has been the biggest lesson I've kind of learned. Because my productions have gotten bigger, but not a whole lot bigger each time. And so it's really, trying to be creative with what we have.
So are there any future plans for My Sucky Teen Romance that we should be looking out for?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think it's out there on DVD and Blu-ray and VOD and other things. I'm not sure how to work Xbox, whatever that is. it's out there, hopefully. iTunes, I think, is a big one. I really hope... I was actually thinking yesterday when I was driving home, I was like, I hope we fool some people on Xbox that think they're buying a game because we have this 8-bit poster.
That's a really good place to
put it.
It actually would make for an interesting video game if you tried to make one. So what have you got coming up next? What's your next plan?
I have a Halloween coming-of-age story. Or I guess a coming-of-age story that takes place on Halloween because there's nothing supernatural in it. It's kind of a sweet, sad dramedy, I guess, about an 18-year-old who's too old to trick-or-treat and he doesn't quite understand that because he loves Halloween so much. And it's played by Tony Bespe, the kid with the glasses and the crazy hair in Sucky Teen. So he's really goofy and charismatic. So he'll be playing the lead in that. And that's what we'll be doing the Kickstarter for very, very soon, next few days. Yeah, so that'll be next. And then we'll see after that. Maybe more horror. I don't know. Back to comedy. Maybe some alternating there. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I hope that when this project gets rolling, we'll be able to talk to you again about it, because we're really interested in your career, and we think you got a bright future. So I hope we get to talk to you again soon.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for having me on your show.
Thank you. All right, and that was the interview with Emily Haggins. I think she's really smart. She obviously has a very clear idea of what she wants to do with her career, and I think she's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, she you can really tell listening to her talk that she's smarter than your average bear, if you will, for her age. But she still retains she doesn't seem like an old soul. She just seems like, you know, she is 19. She knows what she's doing, and she's just got her stuff straight, for lack of a
word. Seems like she's having a lot of fun doing this. So I'm curious to see what she does when she gets out of the horror realm and starts doing some other things. But yeah, very good interview, I thought, with her.
No, definitely. Thankfully, I get to listen to it when I edit it, because my computer shut down there, and I was able to come back in literally with 2 seconds left. So I'm glad it didn't disrupt us again.
Oh,
I hear there's some record-breaking news in the box office. Now I forget the name. I was thinking of this line the entire show, and now I forget the name of the movie. What's the one that broke the per-screen average earlier this year? Not Moonrise Kingdom. Magnolia. What was it? Never mind. I'm talking about The Master. It broke. it broke single theater records. But there was another movie that literally just broke that record earlier this year that was unseated fairly quickly.
Oh, it wasn't Moonrise Kingdom?
I guess it was Moonrise Kingdom.
I was thinking of the other one.
I'm saying Helen Keller. Man, I'm screwed up today.
Mirren. What the hell? No, yeah. Helen Mirren. Shoot, I don't know. I don't remember, dude.
That's all right. I was doing so well today, keeping my sentences together. Goddamn computer shut down, and now I'm all lost in the sauce.
Are you thinking of the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel?
Yes. I said Magnolia.
I don't remember that breaking any records, but it did do really well. She wasn't in that, Helen Mirren. it was Judi Dench was in that. All right, guy, anyway.
Old British lady, I got it.
All right, the box office this week. You're right, there was a record broken, and it was by Paul Thomas Anderson, The Master. Opened at only 5 theaters, earned an incredible $730,000, folks. That is $146,000 per site average. That broke the record for a limited release. That is crazy. I can't wait to see what it does when it expands starting next week. We'll get to see it tomorrow, but yeah, it's going to be
this way. Moonrise,
awesome.
The last movie to break that per screen record is now at $44 million, which, you know, and by blockbuster standards is fairly average, but for a movie that opened pretty much the same way The Master did, with the same kind of buzz and everything like that, it's pretty damn good, I would say.
Yeah, it did really well, Moonrise Kingdom, and I think it's still in theaters, to be honest. I think it's doing really well. It's just hung around, you know. It just keeps making money week after week after week. It never did any huge numbers. I think the highest it ever did in a week was maybe $3 million, but it just keeps going and keeps going. So I mean, hey, more props.
The only movies on the top 50 that or top 100 really that have been out as long are The Avengers, obviously. Bernie, believe it or not, is actually number one, been on the charts for 21 weeks. But Moonrise Kingdom is at 17 weeks right now.
Nice. All right, but number one was Resident Evil Retribution, which we talked about earlier. Opened at $21.1 million, and the phone is ringing here in the house. That's lower than the last three movies started out as, but as we talked about earlier, it's all about what it does in the foreign market when it comes to these movies anyway. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what it does once it starts breaking out there. Number two is Finding Nemo 3D, which I couldn't bring myself to go to the screening for this.
I think I talked about it. Finding Nemo, I think, is one of the most underrated Pixar movies as far as emotional gravitas, if you will. But I think it's got a lot of heart. It's got great voice acting. It's a lot of fun. Terrible Pixar movies movie. To me, I never think that they are as you know, awards worthy as people have said, like Toy Story 3. I think they're amazing movies, but I just can't get over the cartoon hump, I guess. But
Finding Nemo is just a bad movie. It's terrible. It's Pixar's worst by far. Just kidding. It's not that bad. Finding Nemo's fine. It's not one of my favorite Pixar movies. It's fine. But did I want to go see it? Did I want to go see it in 3D? No.
And there's
no reason to,
really. I mean, the 3D doesn't really add anything. The best thing that came of the 3D re-release for this is something we don't get to see a lot because we see everything at screenings generally, and they don't have the pre-show commercials. But they have a great pre-show turn off your cell phone commercial based on Finding Nemo where Bruce the shark eats the guy. That's the best thing to come
those
out
are
of
good.
The re-release.
Those are good. I like those. I'm only disappointed.
I mean,
the only thing that is disappointing to me is that I won't get to see the Toy Story 3 short that precedes this, Partysaurus Rex. I really want to see that, but I don't want to watch Finding Nemo.
I actually forgot about that, but the Partysaurus Rex, now I'm going to contradict myself with what I said about Toy Story, but it really shows you why Toy Story is the top of the Pixar chain. It's just so much fun. Basically, Rex it gets moved into the bathroom with the bathroom toys, the bathtub toys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, none of them have arms. They're all used to floating. So he gets to turn on the water so they can all party while the kids not take
little dino arms like the first time.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's just a little short, but it really shows the power of a short film because in the 3 or 4 minutes that it lasts, you really get invested in what's going on and you really realize why Toy Story is so good.
I think the incredible thing about the Toy Story movies is that you can make a film out of any one of the characters, and people will love it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rex is probably one of the least of the other characters, but you want to see a movie with him anyway. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. You can make a movie out of Barbie and Ken. You know, you can make a movie out of any of these characters, and people will love them. I think the Toy Story movies are probably the most enduring of any of the Pixar movies they'll ever have.
Yeah, I mean, depth of character in their cast listing is pretty amazing. I mean, they give obviously Buzz and Woody get the most attention, but they give
they're like the least interesting to me.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, I don't know if this has been fleshed out or because they're kind of two dimensional. No pun intended. But
it's just that we see so much of them.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like I know everything about them already. But everybody else to me, they kind of just get to pop in and do their thing, and I always want to see more of them doing their thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Pixar's capable of it. I mean, I would even watch a short film up to like a half an hour with the Slinky Dog. You know, they just have a lot of good stuff on there. So
yeah,
what else we got right now?
Number three is The Possession, which is still doing well. $41 million total after about 3 or 4 weeks now. Lawless is not going to do better than The Possession at any point. It seems $30 million total now. It's sad in a way. Number five is Paranorman at the $49 million. Number six, The Expendables 2 at $80 million. I guess it's not going to surpass $100 million, which makes me think we might not see that Expendables 3 after all. We'll see. We'll see what it does worldwide. Number six is The Expendables 2. Number seven is The Words at $9 million. Number eight is The Bourne Legacy, which is now at $107.8 million. Number nine is The Odd Life of Timothy Green at 46.3. And number 10, still there, is The Campaign, which now is up to $82.8 million. That movie's got some pretty long legs, too.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to want to go away. We talked about The Master already. Also, Arbitrage, which is the Richard Gere financial thriller that a lot of people are talking about, also did really well in limited release. 197 theaters, $2 million total. Not bad at all. It's also on demand, so if you want to watch that, and like I said, it's got some great reviews right now, you can actually rent it through our Punch Drunk Critics Superstore. Just go to the site and click store, type in Arbitrage, and you're there.
Mm-hmm. And if you need a spelling of Arbitrage, Google search it and then go to our site, because I wouldn't be able to spell it right. I know that much. You mentioned you can get it on video on demand. Do those numbers factor into box office numbers?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if they do when they do this, because with Arbitrage, it was a same-day release. You know,
they do more and more of those.
Yeah, it came out on demand the same day it was available in theaters. So I don't know if it factors in or not. That's a good question. I have to look that up.
especially considering that the mechanics of choosing what movies get made and who gets to direct the next movie haven't really changed since that advent. So, you know, these people might be getting screwed if their movie's doing awesome on, you know, a movie like Arbitrage, or however the fuck you say it, that you wouldn't necessarily have to see in a theater environment to enjoy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we were talking about that, and I was thinking about the movie Bachelorette, mm-hmm. which was number one on iTunes for weeks before it came out in theaters, and it made a ton of money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just, I assume it factors in at some point. I guess they don't really care as long as it makes the money. But, you know, this is kind of the wave of the future. I know that the last few weeks I've ordered a lot more movies on demand.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot more movies that way than I have at screenings the last 2 weeks, which is weird. But
yeah.
It's just, you know, it's convenient and, you know, whatever. So
it is. It's one of those things where, I mean, we heard about this movement years ago, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it's because of the subtle change in flow of this kind of stuff that it really kind of doesn't seem like you're in the future yet. Because we always expect new technology to be like Skynet. Like, you know, one day it's not there and the next day it takes over. But it doesn't really happen like that. It happens gradually to the point where now, like, if this had happened in one day 3 years ago, we would have been like, holy hell, you know, the whole movie industry is going to go down, or theater industry is going to go down. But
it hasn't really turned out to be the case.
Yeah.
It really hasn't. Movie grosses haven't gone down. Not really. I mean, the last few weeks of box office have been terrible, but overall, they haven't really gone down. And it seems like people are willing to pay money to do both, you know. And this has been a good way for movies that wouldn't really play in theaters to find some success. Like a movie like Nobody Walks, people aren't going to pay to see it in theaters,
right.
But it can find success and on iTunes, I mean, because it has recognizable stars. And a movie like Bachelorette probably played better at home than it would in theaters. I mean, it's just so it seems like it's kind of just broadening the base, and I think that's a good thing. More movies, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a good thing on a lot of different levels. One thing I have noticed, especially like I was talking last week with our local movie theater here, is that it's causing a lot of theater owners to kind of, you know, rethink making their product better. But even more so, I forgot what my second point was going to be. Damn, I just went blank right in the middle of it.
It's probably a
even
good
more
time
so. It gives an avenue for movies. You know, that's what I was going to say. Movies, at least me, I don't know how everybody else is, but having them available on video on demand really heightens the impulse buy ability of movies.
Yes.
Because, you know, it as lazy as it's going to make me sound, going to the theater is an undertaking. You know, you got to plan it, you got to go out, you got to block out 2 hours. But, you know, if it's 9:30 at night, me, you know, we're sitting around the house not doing anything, I'm like, oh, you know, I want to see that movie. Bam, $10
well,
right there.
I'll say this as someone who I don't. I hate to make it sound like our site is some big deal, but
it is.
But the opportunity to watch a movie a month before it hits theaters and being able to review it without having the publicist over my shoulder is very refreshing to me.
Mm-hmm.
like a movie like God, there was one that I did not too long ago that I wrote a review for, and I know it's coming out here in a few weeks, you know, mm-hmm. but I don't have to be beholden to their schedule. I can watch it here in the comfort of my own home and then write the review now if I want to, or do whatever and just show it and just put the review up whenever I want to, weeks earlier than they would like me to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely.
I like
cool
that aspect
thing,
of it.
No, you're absolutely right. The coolest thing is, I mean, let's be honest, one of the coolest things about doing this job when we first started was seeing things before everybody else saw them. And this kind of actually, I don't know if they meant to do it or if it's just a genius side effect, but it really gives you know, the general public an ability to do the same thing because they don't really release things on video on demand with a lot of fanfare like they do in the theater. So, you know, if nobody knows Bachelorette style video on demand, you catch it, then you can talk about it. It's like, oh, yeah, oh, I thought that didn't come out. Yeah. And I know it's silly, but it's a cool little thing that people like to do.
And a lot of the great festival movies from earlier in the year simply aren't going to get a theatrical release around here. So the best way to catch up with them is through on demand where they're available. So
yeah.
I think that's a great thing. But anyway, we're quickly running out of time here. So let's do the DVDs, and then we're going to talk some video games.
Okay, best week of DVDs in a while for me.
This is a great week of DVDs, man.
Indiana Jones, Lucasfilm has released their rectum muscles on the Indiana Jones trilogy, and it is now coming to Blu-ray.
Did you already pre-order it?
I never pre-order anything for some reason. I don't know why I don't, because then I would get it on Tuesday, but whatever. But it's going to be an expensive week for me, because also Cabin in the Woods is coming out.
What is your favorite Indiana Jones movie, quick?
Temple of Doom.
What?
I really like Temple of Doom. I don't know why. It's just more fun.
Yeah,
you're not the only person
in the world who says that.
It's more of a serial, more of a B-movie serial that they were intended to. I mean, these movies are supposed to be takes on radio serials of the 30s, and Temple of Doom just captured that a little bit better for me. I mean, Last Crusade is probably my favorite, but if somebody says, which one do you want to watch in a quick moment like you just did, I'm going to say Temple of Doom every time.
It's Raiders of the Lost Ark or Last Crusade for me. It's kind of a toss-up, but I think I'm going to lean towards Raiders of the Lost Ark because I think it's a little bit fresher. Like you said, The Cabin in the Woods is also coming out this week. That's a must-buy. Mm-hmm. Cabin in the Woods is a must-buy, period. I'm going to show that to Susan because I want to see if she likes it. The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which we just mentioned earlier.
I screwed that up when that was on my DVD list.
Yeah, no, it's coming out on DVD, so your grandma will be there. You can buy that for her for whenever. She'll probably love it. God, there was so much that was coming out here. Now I'm lost.
Biggest
I should have wrote them all down.
The week is Supernatural Season 7 comes out.
The Katy Perry movie is coming out this week. That's coming out if you care about Katy Perry. There's multiple versions of that crap that's coming out. So if you want to watch that, go ahead. The Magic of Belle Isle, which is the Morgan Freeman movie that couldn't make it to theaters for some reason. Here's something that I'm excited for. Well, a couple things I'm really excited for. I'll just run them off both in a row. Get a Life, the complete series, is coming out on DVD. Now, most people are probably, some of you might be too young for Get a Life. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember it. It was a show that starred Chris Elliott. I don't know what I can point to that he was in that you might know him from, but
Probably something about Mary would be the biggest thing I know him from.
Maybe that or Cabin Boy. I don't know if anybody saw Cabin Boy. But Get a Life is this show that I love. He basically just plays this really goofy loser. Just everything that can bad that can happen to him happens to him. And the guy's just a total dork. But it's a fantastic show. That's coming out on DVD for $41, which is about $30 more than it needs to be.
Yeah.
So that's a little disappointing. Art of Rap. This is the Ice-T hip-hop documentary that's coming out. That Julian reviewed for us because I didn't have time to go see it. And I'm really anxious to watch that. I don't know if I'll buy it, but I definitely want to see it. So
I actually didn't get a chance to check out Julian's review, but I know as much as I liked the Tribe Called Quest documentary, I was more excited to see this. Like I'm more anticipated to see this movie. I don't know if it's because it covers a wider base or what, but that's definitely one to check out.
Hip-hop documentaries, there have been a shit ton of them. There have been a lot of them. And they all tend to cover the same ground. So I'm curious to see how this one can be different, other than the fact that it has Ice-T, doing the work. But I want to see that. Hysteria, that's the vibrator comedy with Maggie Gyllenhaal. That one's fun.
We have an interview up with the director of that movie. I still don't know how you did the interview without blushing the entire time, but... Are we the writer or the director we talked to? Or both?
I think it was the director. Okay. Pretty sure it's the director.
Quick rundown of everything else that's coming out. Ed Wood, a movie I hadn't seen until about two months ago, actually a lot better than I thought it would be, is out. Judge Dredd, the original with Sylvester Stallone, Halloween 2 and 3. The Devil's Advocate hits Blu-ray. And that's about it.
How did you miss Michael Biehn's directorial debut, The Victim? That comes out this week also.
Because I don't want people to know about it. Because I
don't want anybody else. You don't want the 10 people who are going to buy it to know that you're.
Well, here's the thing: it looks cheap, and there's absolutely no reason for a movie that's released by a studio, even if it's a small independent studio, to look cheap when a 14-year-old with a little gusto and a digital camera can make a good-looking movie. It looks like one of the movies like that was made on the Hercules Kevin Sorbo set or something like that. You know, like that same kind of cheap feel. I can't get down with that for some reason. I know it's shallow, but that's the way I am. Next week, I'm really, really scared for my bank account, but we'll get into that then. I'm pretty sure that Christmas presents will not be bought based on last week, or next week, I mean.
if you dig deeper into the list, there's some other great stuff that's coming out this week. Chico and Rita, which is a festival hit. It was also nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards. That comes out this week. Detachment with Adrian Brody and Christina Hendricks. That's the school teacher. Adrian Brody's a school teacher film. That one is really good also. And Oslo, August 31st, which is a foreign film that I think everybody will want to check out. So there's way too much. If I had money, I would buy probably half this shit. Even The Baby Makers comes out, and I know that movie stinks, but it's made by the Broken Lizard guys, and it stars Paul Schneider and Olivia Munn. And I'll always take the opportunity to see more Olivia Munn. So, you know, that's one of those things that I'll probably end up renting.
Speaking of seeing more Olivia Munn, I don't know how I missed those leaked pictures that came out months ago, but those are tasteful. I like them. Real quick rundown, what's new on Netflix? Instant, Abduction, the Taylor Lautner movie, Team America World Police, Marley, the Bob Marley documentary, Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, Mission Impossible, the original. And the biggest one of the week is The Gray with Liam Neeson. I don't know what Netflix is doing with their contracts, but they are getting a lot better movies a lot sooner. Also, Terra Nova Season 1, which failed horribly. Maybe you want to check it out.
That show sucked. Sorry, I just got distracted. One of our colleagues in our fantasy football league just texted me and was like, "Do you like Matt's score?" Matt is the, like, 5-time champion in our league. He always wins. He's got, like, 25 points with, like, and the day is almost over.
Oh, it's just so awesome.
It's ugly. It's really ugly.
I hate to be a hater, but he is the 5-time champion of our league.
Yeah,
he needs a day like this. He has two players that have to go with 25 points, so, Matt, you just got put on blast.
It's ugly. It's really ugly. He's not going to win no matter what these two guys do.
On the other hand, 20 points more than anybody else. Just saying it.
Anyway, we're probably going to have to skip news because we want to talk video games for a few minutes in here. If we have a few minutes left, we'll cover some news. But I really want to talk about video games.
Yes.
We mentioned it last week as a setup, so I think we should do that. But
we'll skip news. We'll just, if we have time, we'll cover the RoboCop thing since we promised that to some people. Video game movies, Resident Evil coming out, showing us proposed a very good question last week. Are video game movies the next comic book movies? Which they were both kind of pariahs in the industry up until X-Men, really, because you had movies like Fantastic Four, which I know was just made to keep the rights back in the early 90s. Captain America was made several times, looked horrible. Spider-Man was made in the late 70s, looked like a Bollywood movie. Just a lot of crap in that genre. And we all know how comic movies have gone now, so can video game movies do the same thing?
I think so. I mean, we're seeing an unprecedented number of video game movies that are coming out or that are due to come out, and they've all got like really top name talent attached to them, which is really what happened with the comic book movies when they first started coming out. You mentioned some of the older ones that were just kind of crappy throwaway movies, looking solely to capitalize on the name of the movies. But when they started coming out with Blade around the 90s and then the X-Men movies in the early 2000s, you started seeing like really big-time creators attached to them who wanted to make actual franchise films that stood out on their own. And we're starting to see that with video game movies now. Just looking at a list of some of the stuff that's coming out, you've got a Metal Gear movie that was just announced a couple weeks ago. You've got Assassin's Creed that has Michael Fassbender attached to star in it right now. That's incredible just on itself. Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell, that one's been in the works for a while. Josh Trank, the guy who gave us Chronicle, is going to be doing the Fantastic Four reboot. He's doing Shadow of the Colossus. And then you've got Scott Wall, who did Act of Valor earlier this year. He's going to be doing Need for Speed. And that's just really a part of it. I mean, we got Due X also. We've got some other stuff that's coming out, too. Video game movies are really taking over right now.
Okay, let me update my bad video game movies real quick. I just found where my list was. Super Mario Brothers, Double Dragon, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Wing Commander, Tomb Raider I actually liked a lot, Blood Rain, Doom, Blood Rain 2, the first Max Payne, which I liked a lot.
The first Tomb Raider's good. The second Tomb Raider is shitty.
I think it was the last good Angelina Jolie we saw. But
you didn't like her in Salt?
No, she just I don't like her since she somehow shed 20 pounds from her already 105-pound frame, and now she's just like a moving skeleton. But there's a lot of stuff. Like Silent Hill 2 is the first one people loathe. They hate it. Somehow they managed to wrangle the coolest
Silent
characters.
Hill.
You did? You liked the first one?
I really liked the first Silent Hill. I thought it was one of the better video game adaptations we've seen. Really good. In terms of being faithful to the comic, but I mean to the video game, I thought Silent Hill probably did better than any other. Mm-hmm. Because Resident Evil, I mean, it's really just Resident Evil by name. I mean, it doesn't really.
Oh yeah,
there's no horror to that franchise at all. It's just action. You know, it's just an action franchise. But Silent Hill is truly a horror movie, and it had some genuine scares in there. The special effects were good, and those freaking nurse things, man, those things are creepy. I actually really like the Silent Hill movies, and I'm kind of anxious to see how the sequel goes.
Yeah, you know, one thing about the sequel, I had just seen the trailer in 3D for the first time this weekend when I saw Resident Evil, and they did one of the coolest things with the 3D that I've ever seen, and the only other time I've seen anything like it is when they do the cell phone commercials like I was talking about before, and they show the first row of people in the shadow, but the new Silent Hill uses shadows in the foreground with the 3D in a way that really makes you jump every time you see it. And visually, it's amazing. It's got the coolest characters from Game of Thrones with Jon Snow and Sean Bean. And it looks really good. But there's a lot of – while there are a lot of stinkers still coming out, like King of Fighters and Tekken, I mean, there's Silent Hill 2, obviously, but
– No, it's funny because – I always forget about those movies because those movies do exist. The Tekkens and the King of Fighters, those crappy movies that come out, they mostly come out in Japan or straight to DVD, so I always forget about them. But those still exist. I thought Dead or Alive was actually pretty good a few years ago. We mentioned it earlier, which is probably the first time you'll hear us mention Dead or Alive twice in a single show on totally different subjects.
Right.
But
unless we're talking about movies we most want to watch alone or something.
Yeah, it's a movie. Every time I'm watching TV with Susan, Dead or Alive always just happens to be on, and I always flip to it, and she always gives me this look.
I love Sarah Carter. Sarah Carter is so hot.
Was she Helena? Which one was she?
Yeah, she was the main chick.
Oh.
But then again, the one that played the thief chick, I don't really know Dead or Alive that well. What's her name? She's super cute too. But video game movies.
Yeah.
There's one movie that I am putting everything I have into hoping they do it right because I've always thought it had the coolest story for a movie series, and that's Castlevania. I mean, Simon Belmont, the vampire hunter, the going into the castle to fight everything. I mean, obviously there would have to be a massive change because you don't want your main character finding chicken legs in wall fixtures during the movie. But I think there's a great movie in there. Halo, you know, has been in and out of everything. Call of Duty is one movie I don't think they should make because people forget very quickly that the movie would have to come from the one player thing, and the one player thing is. You know, it's very standard fare. Dead Space, I think, would be a great one. Metal Gear Solid, you mentioned. Kane and Lynch, I think, was already in some level of pre-production with, like, Bruce Willis or something.
It was, never happened. So was the Halo film. The Halo film was in the works, I think, back in 2006,
Peter
2007.
Jackson was
and it just never came about either. I mean, there's a lot of these movies that come about and fail. Metal Gear has been like that for a long time also. It's been talked about a lot. Same with Uncharted, Drake's Fortune, which at one time had David O. Russell and Mark Wahlberg attached to it.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if they had a falling out or what, but David O. Russell and Mark Wahlberg aren't boys anymore, it seems. And that movie just kind of fell apart.
And
so,
that movie is
for square one right now.
Is ripe for I mean, it's already complete. I mean, Drake, Uncharted Fortune 2 is widely known as the best story video game that there ever was.
I mean, it's Indiana Jones. I mean, it's in a lot of ways. And I remember back in the day, people were pissed when Wahlberg was attached to it because they really wanted Nathan Fillion to play Drake.
God damn, he would be a good choice, wouldn't he?
He probably would be a good choice.
I mean, looks
I
the
always
voice.
Like that guy. He definitely looks the part. Did he do the voice? He didn't do the voice, did he?
He might. You know, I would think that after you said that, I would definitely think that he was at least the inspiration, like Michael Biehn was for the original Metal Gear. Because the dude looks just Drake looks exactly like Nathan Fillion.
Right. I mean, he definitely sounds like him.
Yeah.
No, he didn't do the voice.
Of course, Oregon Trail, you know, the epic Oscar movie would be great to come out. See how many ways they can make Daniel Day-Lewis die of dysentery, however the frick you say it. I always say that wrong. which, by the way, guys, if you never knew, explosive diarrhea is what that is. That's what you died from in Oregon Trail was diarrhea. There's what's the one movie that above all other video games you'd like to see adapted?
I would love. This will never happen. But I would love to see, and these are both Capcom games. Capcom is my video game producer of choice, always. But I would love to see a Marvel versus Capcom game. I would give my left arm to see that movie. I don't know how they could ever do it, but I would love to see that.
That would just be ripe for you to hate, though, don't you think? Like Mortal Kombat when it first came out, like you're like, oh man, I would love to see Sub Zero fight Johnny Cage on screen, and then it comes out, you're like,
then it happens, you're like, yeah. I know, but seriously though, I mean, this is total dream stuff right here. Like, if they could get all the people who actually played the Marvel characters in live action movies, and then have them fighting against a CGI Mega Man. I mean, I don't care. That's fucking awesome.
That would be awesome. Like,
that's fucking awesome to me. You know, a Mark Ruffalo Hulk fighting against a CGI Mega Man or a Strider Hero? Shit. I mean, that would be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
The other one is Rival Schools, which is another Capcom fighting game, which is my favorite fighting game of all time. Not a lot of people played it. But basically, it's teenage fighters, and they all have, like, their little things. Like, my favorite character is this guy named Shoma. He's always in a baseball outfit, and he has this giant bat that he uses, you know? And there's this one chick who's a volleyball player. So she has, like, she launches fiery volleyball spikes at you. And stuff like that, to me, is just a lot of fun. I would love to see those things brought to the big screen. They'll never happen, but if I won the lotto tomorrow, I would approach Capcom with that idea and say, I'll back this movie right now.
Well, even if you only made it as like a CGI, like, well, there was another Resident Evil Damnation came out this week, which is basically a CGI feature. And right. I think that would be an awesome CGI feature. I mean, I don't know how the licensing would work, but
the trailers look good for it. We have the trailers up on our site. It looks good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I actually just watched it earlier today. It looks like what, strangely enough, the movies are trying to be like the video games now, in look as well, because it actually looks better than the movie that came out. Area 51. Do you remember this movie? It was an arcade cabinet.
Yes.
Game. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I hear that's in some level of development. And Spy Hunter was the other one. I know.
Remember Dwayne Johnson was supposed to be in that movie years ago?
Yeah, I do. You
actually just reminded me of that. I remember writing about that all those years ago. It was the Spy Hunter movie with Dwayne and Rob Johnson, and it never came about. It just kind of disappeared.
I don't know if I want to see the movie, or I just want to see what they would make that theme song into on a big screen budget. That is a badass theme song. I always love that thing.
Right.
But I mean, do we actually see? I was actually thinking a weird turn might happen where comics are less user intuitive than movies. You got to flip the pages. Even if you're on a tablet, you have to actually read, which people are very lazy about these days. But video games, could the way comics kind of became huge in movies, couldn't you see almost, instead of video games transitioning to movies, video games taking more from movies and making it a more interactive experience and just becoming another level of media all in itself?
I don't know. I kind of think we're already there in a lot of respects. I mean, we're at the point now where video game budgets meet or surpass the budgets of a lot of Hollywood productions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at some of the trailers we see for video games; they're basically movies. I mean, they're just movies. I mean,
it's kind of annoying.
They have
full orchestras. Full motion.
They have full orchestras for many of these games now. They hire voice cast that I would put up against anything DreamWorks or Pixar gives us. I mean, They have full-time screenwriters who all they do is come up with full plots and full scripts for these video games. We're at the point where they're already basically making movies, and we're just getting a chance to play the movies. So I think we're already at that point, and it's only going to get more so, I think, over the years.
Yeah, so I'm sure I actually want to revisit this topic with you another time, maybe even as a special show in itself, because I think we could really go into what could happen and everything like that. With 5 minutes left, I really, really want to just get a word or two out about this RoboCop thing.
I was waiting for you to say something about it. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's see, It's fine to shoot off the mouth if you stick by your guns. And it's not that I shy away from what I think. It's just that I tend to overthink. So after I'll say something right away, and then I'll kind of give it more thought, and eventually reshape my opinion. As soon as I saw RoboCop, I immediately thought of Knight Rider 2000. That's what I put up on Facebook, which was the 1991 TV movie where they updated Kit to the most horrible-looking thing ever. And that's just the feeling I got from it. It doesn't look like it, but that's the feeling I got from it. Now, I think RoboCop being chrome is – I know it's one of those fanboyish things, but I think that was actually an important part of it because the chrome really shows the opulence of OCP more than, the black Kevlar look that he's got there. But as I'm looking at it more and more, it does look pretty freaking cool. I mean, if you get up close to the visor head area, it looks really, really cool. And then the one sheet that you released today, I don't know where that one sheet is going to fit because it's about 7 times longer than any other regular one sheet. But it really gives me a good feeling about it just because you actually mentioned in your article the tagline, "We've got the future under control." I mean, that's it really shows that at least in that respect, they have a little bit of the soul of the original in mind.
Right. I mean, like I said when I wrote the thing about the photos, there's been a lot more bad said about this movie than good. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to worry about how this movie's going to turn out. But the thing that gets me by is the cast, which is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can look past the way this suit looks for now. I don't think it looks that great. Personally, I think it looks okay. But I also acknowledge that there is going to be a lot of post-production work done on it. It's not going to look like that. I mean, it's going to look similar in design maybe, but it's going to look a lot better on screen than it does with Joel Kinnaman just walking around on set.
Well, I'm just glad they didn't go Green Lantern on it. I mean, as long as they don't do that, I'm good.
Yeah, but it did remind me of a cross between the Batman Begins Batman suit and the Guyver. So those are the two things that reminded me
when
of.
When I heard you say the Guyver, I literally just had a nostalgia overload as soon as you said that. Cause I hadn't thought about the Guyver in years and years. It does look like, and your Batman Begins comparison is spot on. If you cover up the visor, he's wearing the original Batman Begins uniform to a T almost. The other thing that bugged me about the one sheet is it looks like his leg that RoboCop's written on that's got red laser stuff in it. I hope they don't overdo it on that. RoboCop didn't. I hope they're not getting confused with Knight Rider and they make his visor do the. thing, because that would be I'd probably end up liking it. I like that kind of stupid stuff, but
yeah.
So okay, I just wanted to get that out there, and I think one thing we do have to mention to everybody that for them to go to the site, a huge trailer dropped this past week, Lincoln. What did you going to be the Oscar darling? I think that's pretty much already not darling, but Oscar juggernaut.
It's going to be one of them for sure.
Yeah,
for sure it will be.
What did you think of the trailer?
I liked it a lot. I thought it looked grand and sweeping, and I look like the historical epic that I wished War Horse could have been last year. I think it looks great. And the main thing, I guess, is Daniel Day-Lewis and his performances as Lincoln. And he seems to be spot on. He gives basically only one kind of bit of dialogue there at one point, and he sounds commanding and charismatic, which is what you'd expect him to sound like playing the president. So I think it looks great. I'm anxious to see this movie now. Comes out in November.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I think, believe it or not, Abraham Lincoln that's the knockoff one. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It really kind of spoiled me a little bit for Lincoln lookalikes. I think the other Daniel Day-Lewis, no doubt, is going to be a better actor. I'm not saying that, but the other guy just had to look a little bit more down pat. That being said, it is everything you'd expect a Spielberg presidential epic. Well, I mean, probably the most important president of our country's history being tackled by Steven Spielberg. It is exactly what that entails, just putting those two names together.
Yep.
So we got 22 seconds left. HunchDrunkCritics.com.
22 seconds?
Wait. See I told you my clock screwed up.
We have a minute and a half left. Go ahead, do the rundown, and then I'll talk about what's next week.
PunchDrunkCritics.com. Any DVDs, movies, electronics you guys need, click on Shop at PunchDrunkCritics.com. Shop Punch or Critics, the upper right hand corner.
Calm down. We're not that rushed.
We are on PunchDrunkCritics at Gmail and PunchDrunkCritics at Yahoo.com. Twitter at PunchDrunk. What's your Twitter? PunchDrunk.
PunchyCritic.
And stupid, because you guys don't hear in the background it says it's like a freaking nuclear countdown to 60 seconds remaining. Screws me up. But
Next week's show. Next week's show, there's so much. I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to have to get somebody coming in and join us. House at the End of the Street with Jennifer Lawrence. End of Watch, we have an interview with Michael Pena for that movie next week. Liberal Arts with Josh Radner and Elizabeth Olsen. Dread 3D opens next week. Trouble with the Curve with Clint Eastwood. The Master, obviously you know how much we love that. And 10 Years with Channing Tatum. All that comes out next week. It's going to be incredible. So we're going to figure out how we're going to do this.
Yeah, that slow season we were talking about last week is officially over. Not breathe until January. That's all we have to say. So punchdrunkcritics.com. Check it out every day. Thanks for joining us. We are out of here. I'm John.
I'm Travis.
And there's not enough time for the exit.
Later.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewell, so that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.